Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to the next edition of From the Touchline in Seattle. This is Todd Stauber here. I'm with Aaron Heinzen.
Yeah.
Ooh, he's looking good. He's sounding good. You're a little tired this morning, Aaron. It took you a while to get going.
I was. I was just sleepy.
That's what happens typically at night. Weren't your usual lively pre-show self this morning, but a couple cups of coffee at La Rev up here on top of Queen Anne, and you're going. You're ready to go.
Right back in it.
We got a big show here. International week. Lots of games going on. We had USA Denmark, a little disaster there, of course. Couple other international friendlies to note that we'll talk about. Some just tantalizing CONCACAF World Cup qualifying matches. Unbelievable games there. And we'll talk MLS. We'll talk MLS in terms of what happened last week, what's coming ahead this week. And we'll look at some of the teams that are being hurt the most by national team call-ups. We'll kind of look ahead maybe to the Gold Cup this summer and try to see who's gonna take a hit there. We're also going to talk, obviously, about Manchester United-Liverpool match last weekend, Steven Gerrard playing for 36 seconds. And we'll talk, last but not least, about the Clásico, which was a great match. But let's get into it. We're in the United States, so let's talk about the United States here, Heinzen, and let's talk about the U.S. 3-2 defeat to Denmark in 8 friendlies since the World Cup. The U.S. has 2 wins, 4 losses, 2 ties. They've given up 11 second-half goals, Heinzen, and they've given up 7 goals after the 80th minute in 8 matches. I'm not sure this is a good trend.
Yeah, no matter what, friendlies or not, you can't be doing that. I know Klinsmann still throws out the talk that, yeah, they're testing players and stuff, but goals are coming up this summer 4 months away. You got to start getting a little bit more consistent. And these guys are seasoned players. Some of these guys are World Cup veterans now. You can't be doing this kind of stuff. Some of the positioning that we saw, that we looked at over the game, especially against Denmark. Denmark's a pretty good team. I think they'll probably qualify for the European Championships this next year, but regardless of that, I mean, you've got to do a bit better than that.
Yeah.
And especially after that's been late in the game, but that's where they're at right now. Not the best.
Well, and we'll talk about the back four and the possible back four combinations that Jurgen Klinsmann's looking at. One bright spot that came out of the game again, Jozy Altidore.
Great goal.
Just proving me wrong 2 shows ago. I was just crushing him. I think my quote was he was more likely to fall down than score, and I think he scored more goals since I said that than he did in 2 calendar years previous. So thanks for listening to the show, Jozy. Appreciate the support. Glad I can motivate you. Great goal on the first goal. And obviously, he set Johansson there for the second goal and did very well. You know, I thought Altidore looked dangerous and, I guess as dangerous as he could have with the lack of possession that the U.S. had. He's done well yet again. I will say this. His first goal came very much against the run of play. Denmark had dominated the opening minutes. And actually, Timmy Chandler had almost given away a goal just a minute before, long ball played into Altidore. It's kind of a hopeful long ball. I didn't think there was much there. And he fought off both guys and just smashed that near post with his left foot.
That was a great goal. Absolutely fantastic finish. Do you think after, like you said, without the possession, do you think the United States were missing Clint Dempsey and Jermaine Jones the most?
Well, I mean, I know they were missing them, but I don't think
those. You think it would have changed stuff?
I don't know if they helped the possession that much. I think Jermaine Jones helps break things up a little bit. Maybe helps keep possession. Dempsey. I don't think the possession issue would have been helped by Dempsey much. We played. We played against a 3-man midfield in the middle with 2. And we didn't handle that very well. We just couldn't get on the ball. And when we did, we just couldn't keep enough passes to get our shape in the attack and really keep it. Before we got into any rhythm at any point, it was broken down.
Yeah.
And we lost possession. So
I think Dempsey's kind of one of those players that can change that sometimes. He's a veteran guy, can find those spaces. and keep the ball a little bit longer. I mean, Johansson's a great player, and I'm excited to see what he can bring in the future. I think he's just not quite there. He's not at Dempsey level yet, obviously, but Denmark, like, you know, they're a quality side. They got Eriksen in the middle like that. I mean, Bender is obviously at Wolfsburg right now with a great, an unbelievable run in the Bundesliga. But you know what? I think those two injuries for me were big, huge losses for the United States. So that's where I stand.
Okay,
that's
where I stand on it. Let's go through the game just a little bit and to take a look. Let's go through these. I mean, the three goals. Goal one. Denmark equalized just through complete poor team defending from the U.S. Started on the top of the box over on the right side. Not really enough pressure on the ball from the midfield. And for some reason, all of a sudden, John Brooks just steps out. Ball gets played in on that right side. You've got Gregory Garza who steps in, but it lets the service get through. Ball gets in, and the ball's dummied under Michael Orozco, who's supposed to be our center back. And the ball is dummied. He's very soft, lets it go through. In the meantime, Timmy Chandler, for some reason, our right back, instead of tucking in on the back post, has stepped up calling for offsides. He's standing at the top of the box with his arm in the air while Bentner's eating a sandwich, having a cup of coffee, and smashing the ball on our goal for the equalizing goal. It was a bad breakdown from that back four.
Yeah, you can't be doing that, especially from Chandler raising, saying offsides when he didn't realize that he was being held on from the guy behind him. You got to go with the play. I mean, no matter what. Put your hand up and keep running at least if you want to say something to the referee, but to stand there and put your arm up when the play continues that's no good.
I think each of the four had a little bit of a disaster within that. But I would say John Brooks starts it by as soon as he steps out of that. I mean, they slip that ball in and it's on for them, you know, and he kind of started that. So there's goal one. Somehow we get back up 2-1. Great ball from Bradley, finds Altidore. He sets Johansson. Goal 2-1 lead. But again, U.S. defense lets down. Ball gets wide. Again, Garza's let the ball get served. It's a looping, not really looking very dangerous, but, you know, John Brooks has stepped out of the middle of that, of where that ball is going to get served. The ball gets played right over his head. He's nowhere to be found again, leaving it to come back. It's just, to me, it was just unbelievable. So now you've got a guy going up. You've got Chandler going up. He misses a header. I mean, he kind of misses the header, knocks it down. DeAndre Yedlin is slow to step to the knockdown. Nobody steps to the knockdown. Bender's just standing there. Another very easy goal. It's got to be one of the easiest hat tricks ever scored in international play from this guy.
Yeah, he was just floating in the spaces behind them and just right off their plane, right off their shoulder, not making any real quick guarding, crazy intelligent runs. It was just simple stuff for him. And that's we've been talking about if Bender had played an extraordinary game, you know, winning everything, holding it, scoring great goals, we'd be saying fair enough to Bender. But we're just not Lord Bentner.
Not Lord Bentner.
You know, it was, you're right, Stubbs, it was a lot of U.S. mistakes. And, you know, what about Beasler? What about Cameron?
Yeah, well, let's get to the third goal first, because disaster. Then we can talk about potentially who's coming in. Third goal, no pressure in the midfield. Okay, giveaway in the midfield, no pressure in the midfield. So that's a little bit of an issue, you know, I guess. But when you look at it, I mean, again, John Brooks out of shape. Greg Garza way out of shape at left back. Ball gets played over the top. Bender takes a pretty good touch and pops the ball up. And I mean, we watched the replay, you and I, a few times. I mean, Brooks comes in and I mean, he's flinching.
Yeah.
He's flinching. Way. He's a big center back. He's flinching. Ball gets hit back post. Not a good situation at all. To give that up at that point of the game, I mean, after they had already given up the other two goals and had disasters, you'd think they'd sharpen up, yet they didn't.
Yeah, that was that very end piece from Brooks didn't make him look very good. I mean, at least get a foot out there. At least you got to keep your head up. It's not like it was he turned around and there was a volley right in his face, which you can understand is going to be your natural reaction. But to just He knows the ball's coming down. He knows the guy's going to hit it, and he's moving over there, and then he puts his head
well,
down.
Well, if you're that far out of shape, if you're a center back, you better be doing everything you can to block that.
I totally agree.
He runs over to close him down and then flinches like, this might hurt if it hits me.
Exactly.
Hitting me.
Right, which is why it was so awkward looking, and just why didn't you at least stick your foot out? You don't need to put your head in there.
Yeah, anything.
Put your foot out.
Yeah, anything. So I just
that raised some questions, and I think it.
Very.
I'm not sure Klinsmann. I think they've made some decisions for Klinsmann. I think actually with this game,
well,
guys in the back made it pretty easy.
You would think that, but yet Klinsmann comes out and says he thought that the back four did some very good things during the game.
Yeah, fair enough.
I mean, I don't know if that's fair enough. I mean, I'm watching the game. I'm trying to find what those are. I mean, the best thing they did was they walked off the field at the end of the game. That was the best move they made. When the whistle blew, they walked off the field. And that was, to me, the best thing they did all game. He throws in DeAndre Yedlin. He throws in Ventura Alvarado, two young guys at the end there. You know, I understand he's looking at guys. You're going to mix up that back four a little bit against Denmark. And I understand that there's going to be some growing pains there. But let's look back here a little bit. Let's go back to January 28th and go back even further to November 18th. January 28th, we give up 3 goals in a 3-2 loss to Chile.
Yep.
November 18th, we give up 4 goals in a 4-1 loss to Ireland. If you look at those back fours, in against Chile, you've got Steve Birnbaum, you've got Jermaine Jones, you've got Matt Beisler, and you've got DeAndre Yedlin. Those are your back four that have given up those 3 goals. Against Ireland, you've got Fabian Johnson, you've got Jeff Cameron, you've got Matt Beisler, you've got Timmy Chandler. Those guys have given up those goals. A couple other guys you have in the mix, obviously. You got Tim Ream in the mix to play in the back. You have, again, we mentioned the young Ventura Alvarado in the back to play. Who else do we have in the back in the U.S.? I don't think Brad Evans can be considered as a potential U.S. men's national team player in the back at this point based on what we've seen out of him the last 2 games. So, yeah, I mean, we look at these players and, you know, I almost understand Klinsmann being positive after the game because he doesn't have a whole lot to work with. You know, he doesn't have a whole lot to go on here. If you look at the list of guys that could potentially make up this back four for this round of World Cup qualifying.
Those are great points. I the only thing that comes to my mind when you list those games is you've got the Ireland game is in Dublin, the Chile game is in Chile, the Denmark game's in Denmark. They're just one-offs. You're bringing people in the last second. How ready are they for this game? What are their goals coming out of it? What's the midfield like sitting in front of them? And who's in the box? I thought Raimondo did okay. Denmark.
Yeah, he was okay. And that's
okay.
Another question, obviously.
He could do what he could do.
Yeah, we talked about that last week, goalkeeping leading to the new cycle. Will it be Howard? Will it, you know, will Raimondo, you know, be, or are we going to have Guzan? You know, I mean, who's that going to be? But obviously, I think that plays into it. I thought Raimondo was pretty good. He was okay. Although I think on the second goal, that looping cross was in the air for 6 seconds.
Yeah,
I thought he could have came and got it. And he came and hesitated a little bit. And, you know, he didn't. I thought he could have done something better with that.
Right, but to play the kind of devil's advocate to what I was just saying about why have these friendlies in these, you know, like Chile is a long ways away to go for one game. You know, even though it's kind of, it's before the MLS season, you know, you have a camp, yeah, we're going to go down to Chile, but that's, it's still within 3 goals. I mean, international friendly or not, whether the result matters or not, you're still looking to get to make the team to play for the Gold Cup this summer, which leads into the World Cup qualifying, etc. You know, so important things, and you can't be giving up that many goals and be a part of that kind of back four. But I still think it is tough to just come from one spot, fly down, play one game, have a camp, playing against a home side. Well, that's a difficult thing in an international friendly. I think Klinsmann, what he is doing right, is putting these guys in these awkward positions for these quick trips and, you know, getting them out of their comfort zone.
I'm going to go devil's advocate against your devil's advocate. Okay.
I
hear what you're saying.
Right.
And
you know,
I appreciate your patriotism.
Yes.
But these are guys that play in big leagues. Fabian Johnson, Germany. You know, Michael Orozco is playing in Mexico. Tim Ream playing in England. You know, DeAndre Yedlin, not playing in England. He's training in England.
Cameron, you know, it's
Jeff
City,
Cameron
you know?
In England. I mean, these are guys that are playing at a high level. John Brooks is playing in Germany. Timmy Chandler is playing in Germany. I mean, these are not bad leagues. Greg Garza, he's playing in the top division in Mexico.
Yeah.
It's very discerning. I'm not feeling good about where we're at in the back is because I just, you know, I mean, I almost feel like we're England. We just don't have good enough players. I mean, you can throw these guys around and all you want. I mean, the one thing I hope they don't do is bring in Breck Shea to play right back like we saw him play for Orlando. That's not going to help. So that's the only thing I can say.
Yeah, I'm sure. Clint was still looking for the right combination. We'll see if there's anything different in Switzerland. I'm pretty excited to watch that game on Tuesday coming up. Switzerland actually have a World Cup qualifier today, so they'll probably be changing things as well. It's going to be, you know, it is a work in progress, but we've been saying that for a while. Depends on what your thoughts are, how we did in the World Cup this last summer. I was pleased to see us get out of the group. I wasn't pleased to see us lose to Belgium because I thought we had some chances there. But in the end, you know, has Klinsmann done well? Well, he's won the Gold Cup with the team. He did that. Got us out of the group of death in the World Cup. You know, I think people are just, because U.S. soccer is starting to get a little more, or soccer in the United States, I should say, is becoming more and more popular. People's expectations are starting to rise. The women's game's already been winning World Cup for a while, the World Cups or the Olympics. They have their test this summer. So, you know, people are starting to be like, I want to see better soccer. They know a little more about the game now. They know what quality looks like. The United States national team is just not really the best soccer you can be watching at all. So I think that's going to be a challenge for Klinsmann as the game grows, and these players need to put in better performances. Yeah, these games are tough. Friendlies are tough. It's tough to fly in and play two games in 5 days or 6 days, whatever it may be. The games don't count for anything, but your spot counts for something, that's for sure. So it'll be interesting to see how it pans out. And Switzerland's going to be another good test in their own country. And I think Klinsmann's right to be doing this kind of stuff, putting these players in uncomfortable positions in that, against tougher opposition. They're playing Germany this summer. So, I mean, see how that goes. So as far as Germany goes, in fact, speaking of Germany, they fight Australia 2-2, World Cup winners. But they've got a whole other different ballgame on their hands. I shouldn't compare them, actually. But still, you know, the U.S., they do need to figure things out. They can't be letting in this many goals. You're right. Stats are right. Obviously, because they're the facts. But it's just something the U.S. soccer is going to have to deal with and Klinsmann's going to have to deal with.
Well, yeah, and let's talk about, we'll move on. Switzerland Tuesday. Switzerland on Tuesday. We'll see if they can get it right. Probably, we'll see if there's a different combination in the back. I think there could be, but we'll see. Let's talk a little bit about that Germany-Australia game. I watched that game. Australia, I mean, Germany didn't have a bad lineup out. It was 2-1 to Australia until right at the very end. Lukas Podolski, equalizes there at the end. Podolski. I mean, even though it is a friendly, and you know, like we're talking about, how much these friendlies mean. I mean, not that much. Obviously, this game meant a whole lot more to Australia than it did to Germany.
Right.
But a couple great goals from the Australians, and the Germans didn't have a bad side out. You had Bad Stuber out for his first time in a long time. Götze played. I mean, Sami Khedira played. You know, it wasn't like they didn't have their players out. It's not like they brought in the guys from their U21s. I mean, these are real guys. And, you know, it was a good result for Australia. You know, decent game. Not bad.
Right. I mean, I think my thoughts on Germany are, I didn't see the game, but I just think it's got to be difficult being World Cup quality. You know, World Cup winners, everyone, you have a target on you now. Germany always has had a target on them, but it's even bigger now. The players need a little more motivation in order to win, and they've got the Euro stuff coming up. So, like you said, it meant a lot more to Australia than it did to Germany. That said, the quality of the players Germany has, they should be winning those games, but it's just not going to happen every time.
Yeah, that's, I mean, I guess that's my point is that, I mean, I mean, fair enough. I mean, a lot of these players are playing in massive games on the weekend and during the week. And so, you know, it's a tough one to turn around and come in and play in that game and get up for Australia. You know, if you're one of those German players and you're looking at if you're a Real Madrid player, for instance, if you're Mesut Ozil if you're Khedira or whoever it is, and you're looking ahead at the Champions League, you know, and these kinds of things, you're looking ahead at some bigger things. And, it's just one of those situations where, I think, yeah, some of these players come in and how much are they going to be able to give? But still, I think it says something. You had Scotland with a 1-0 win over over Northern Ireland. That was an interesting 185th minute goal there. And then the only other game from last Wednesday was, I don't know, is this a good game? Georgia-Malta? Is that an important one, Hanzo?
That's a classic matchup.
2-0 to the Georgians. Great game there. Thursday, a little bit more there. Brazil 3-1 over France. Great goal from Neymar. Went near post there on that. Smashed it. Looked all right. Brazil looked all right. Again, these teams had their teams out. France did not look great. They had a couple, you know, these players are out there. But again, like I see Benzema in the French lineup. I mean, how much is Benzema giving after he just played in a full Clasico on the weekend? You know, how much is he able to give on Thursday after Sunday?
Right, it's got to be tough. I think France were also missing Paul Pogba, which I think is a massive loss. It is. Friendlies are friendlies, especially when Brazil comes to town. Everybody wants to see what they have to offer. Brazilian national team still got to be the most popular national team you can watch. So, you know. Results are what they are. It's more of kind of a show, I think, for those kinds of things. So kudos to Brazil for bouncing back from the tough World Cup and, you know, beating France. But I think, you know, they're missing Paul Pogba for me. That's the biggest piece there is there for France, for the French national team. So
yeah, well, and let's look at the next result there. And normally we wouldn't mention this, but Colombia 6-0 over Bahrain. And what do you know? Falcao has scored 2 goals for Colombia against Bahrain.
Congratulations, Falcao.
Maybe that's who Manchester United should be playing against is Bahrain. Maybe that would help.
Yeah, you know, good to see him getting goals. You know, anytime you get goals, it's a positive result for you as a forward. But, you know, I wouldn't be hanging my hat on that or anything. And I'm sure he's not, but he's got to be happy to be goals playing on the field and scoring goals. You know, that's a positive. Good win for Colombia.
Yeah, good win for Colombia. So now, let's see, Falcao can score goals against Bahrain. He scores against FTI if he plays against them.
He can score Gibby will take him.
Yeah, Pizzutos. He'll score against Pizzutos. Yeah, that's great. That's great. He's a good player. The last game there, Iran-Chile, a little bit of an upset there. Good result for the Iranians.
And good to see Carlos Queiroz was able to leave and come out and play that game. He was under a little, apparently he wasn't paying his taxes in Iran or something and was not allowed to leave the country for the friendly, but they finally got it all sorted out and there he was coaching. So congratulations, Carlos. The last thing you'd want to be is under investigation from the Iranian government.
Yeah, that's not where you want to be really at all.
Yeah. Well, yeah, so he got out of that, got that thing all sorted out.
Well, I mean, he got out of it for the game. We don't know where he is now. He hasn't been heard from since the match.
But. Well, they weren't allowing him to leave. They said he hadn't paid all his taxes. But they got that all squared away, apparently. So he left the country and was able to coach. But scary things there at first, Carlos. Don't mess around.
The moral of the story is don't trifle with the Iranian government when it comes to taxes.
Do not.
Yeah. Let's talk World Cup qualifiers in the CONCACAF region. A couple of these teams, I'm just curious as to what's going on there. But on Wednesday, Bermuda 5-0 over the Bahamas. Thursday, we had Barbados 4-0 over the U.S. Virgin Islands. Barbados now 4-1 on aggregate. Barbados was actually down 1-0 on aggregate going into that. St. Kitts and Nevis, is it Nevis or Nevis?
I think Nevis.
Okay, we'll go Nevis. They're playing Turks and Caicos Islands. It was 6-2. That now makes that tie 12-4 on aggregate. I'm not sure if they're playing baseball or if they're playing soccer, but these all sound like places I'd like to go visit, but maybe not play soccer.
Yeah, I agree. But these are games, though, that would be kind of fun because I've never actually seen any of these national teams play before. These are the World Cup qualifiers. There's a book out there that I've been meaning to read where the guy follows around these kinds of games all over the world and records scores like this. He goes to the islands in the South Pacific. He goes to the Caribbean, just tiny countries who are instantly eliminated 2 years before the competition really even starts. you know, and it's kind of fun. So I can't remember the name of the title right now. It's a British guy, but
yeah,
of course, British guy. But you know, these are the things. It'd be kind of fun to watch these games every once in a while. They're not going to be on TV. You know, most of the players are not pros. If any are pros, maybe one.
Yeah.
But you know, it's an interest. It's just kind of interesting. I mean, they're completely forgotten by the time the actual tournament starts, or even halfway through qualifying.
Yeah. Well, and the other results, Dominica 3-2 over the British Virgin Islands.
You don't have any thoughts on that at all?
Well, I mean, Belize and Cayman Islands 0-0. I think it's cool. I mean, some of these games, like you said, nobody even knows they happen. And,
right.
You know, these players and coaches, they're training just like the U.S. or Germany or Australia or any other national team. You know, they're putting a lot into it, obviously. And obviously for them, just to get into the next stage of qualifying is a huge success for them. And you look at some of these scores. I mean, Bermuda 5-0 over the Bahamas. I mean, you're looking at Bermuda. They can't be great. How bad is the Bahamas? I mean, who are these guys playing for this team?
Exactly.
Done 5-0 by Bermuda. I mean, I'm worried about this. I mean, same with the Turks and the Caicos Islands. I mean, it's like they're walking down. It's like they're walking down to the beach going, hey, man, see if you can juggle this ball. Okay, you're in. Let's go. You got a game against St. Kitts and Nevis in 2 hours. I think what you're saying, there is some romance to it. There is a bit of romance to it in the fact that you've got these countries and these nations, you know, that are battling just to get into the next round. I mean, they're never going to make the World Cup. They're just battling to play another game, to play another round.
Right. I want to know more about them. I do need to research it a little bit. Just like you said, who are the players? Who are the coaches? I got to feel like some of them are probably – I wouldn't be surprised if some of them were actually playing college soccer in the United States and they're playing in the World Cup qualifiers on the off season. I think that's actually been the case several times, especially for the Caribbean players. But yeah, it's interesting. You know, you could be pulling one or two people off the beach. Great, you can juggle. We got a qualifier here next week.
Listen, I'm pretty sure our over 30s team, FTI, I'm pretty sure that we could advance past that round of qualifying.
So, Jimmy, you got to get a house in the Bahamas.
Right now, I think that we could compete with Turks and Caicos, St. Kitts and Nevis, British Virgin Islands, Belize, Cayman Islands, Bahamas. I think we might be able to. It'd be interesting. Right. We'd have to go on a fitness program, though, so I don't really want to do that.
Yeah.
You're listening to From the Touchline in Seattle here with Todd Stauber and Aaron Heinzen. We are on Blog Talk Radio, and we're also on Twitter at FTTL in Seattle. You can hit us up on Twitter and tell us how great we sound here. We are also on the backsportspage.com. Check us out there. You can go in and listen to archive shows there. And we're on every Friday at 9 a.m. We're going to move on here, Heinzo. And we're going to talk some MLS here. You know, pretty big week coming up this week in the MLS. Some big games last week. Some good results. We got a couple teams that can't seem to find a way to win. We had San Jose open their stadium with a win, and we've got the two New York teams at the top of the table in the Eastern Conference. A little bit of a surprise for Red Bull. Let's start, though. FC Dallas 2-0 over Philadelphia. That was Friday night. Philadelphia is still looking for that first win, Heinzo.
Yeah, still looking for that first win and still looking for that first goal. Stops. They're just really struggling right now. Dallas undefeated, the only team with three wins now in the MLS. There was a red card for Philadelphia, Zach Pfeffer, who had a pretty good game at the start and then just throws this nasty elbow. So who knows what his suspension will be, but he was out. Didn't help Philadelphia at all. Akindele, Ryan Hollingshead, both getting goals. It's kind of a chippy game though. In the end, 27 fouls in the at the last few minutes of the game. You know, unlucky for Philadelphia, but they just with 10 guys, they couldn't really muster anything against Dallas, and they ended up getting booed pretty badly. And the stadium was half empty. It was tough. Philadelphia need a win or something, at least some goals for the fans to cheer about, because they're really having a tough start of the season.
Yeah, it's a rough run of luck, though, when your stadium is half full and the people that are in it are booing you off the field. And you're only three games into the season.
Well, they're definitely coming off the hangover from last year as well. They had This streak's been going on since the end of the summer last year and through the fall, so they haven't had a lot of wins and a lot of stuff to cheer about. So the Union need to pick it up a little bit, but they have an opportunity this next weekend.
And we'll talk about that.
I don't want to give it away. I don't want to give it away.
That's the big the big match of the weekend coming up. Vancouver, a little bit of a surprise going down 1-0 at Orlando, but talk about Orlando's crowd cut in half.
Cut in half, yeah. You know, I actually did not see if the stadium, they closed down the upper part. I don't know, but it was half of what it was at the start. A little bit surprised to see that, you know, since Vancouver, not a bad team coming into town, but still 31,000 there, so that's good. Saw some unbelievable stuff, the stuff that you want to see from Kaká, kind of tearing guys apart with some of his moves. Had some beautiful stuff, really exciting. The great goal, Octavio Rivero. Strikes again for Vancouver, 3 goals, 3 games. 92nd minute, just flicks it near post header, goes all the way to the far post. Sorry, just a diving. A cross comes in, he dives, flicks it into the far post. Huge, huge points for Vancouver. There were some good chances, though, for Orlando. Canadian international Kyle Laren gets through. A great save by Ostead. Excuse me, for Vancouver. He literally threw on a fast break. Ostead saves it, but
Vancouver, there
for Vancouver.
And Vancouver looking pretty good, you know, towards the top of the table there, sitting in third with 6 points. You know, we've talked a little bit about Vancouver and the fact that they're a team with a very strong academy system. They've brought in a lot of international players and I think they're a team. You know, we talked about it in our preview show a couple weeks ago. They're definitely a team to keep an eye on as we go forward. The old classic MLS matchup, two original teams, New York Red Bull, DC United, 2-0 to the Red Bull. Red Bull now sitting in second place in the Eastern Conference, surprisingly.
Yeah, I like the Red Bulls. They've got some great strikers, Lloyd Sam being one of them, Wright Phillips being the other, and you know, those guys are both getting on the score sheet. You know you're going to probably win. I heard Chris Wolfe had a really close shot for DC, something early, but they didn't have any other chances after that. And the Red Bulls get another victory, which is, you know, real positive for that team that I think at the beginning of the season, Stobbs, you were saying maybe they weren't going to be as good before, but I'm staying with them. I think Wright Phillips, anytime you get him scoring and get him going, that's going to be one of their biggest concerns. But Lloyd Sam, who had that early goal, the first week of the season, the unbelievable strike is back in it. So Red Bulls have to be really excited about that. And DC, you know, they got another tough matchup coming up as well this week. So they can't be too happy about the loss. Obviously, you're not happy about a loss, but they got a bit of a tough schedule here coming up.
Yeah, well, and then in that last game, San Jose opened up their new stadium. Well, I mean, they didn't really open it up because San Francisco 49ers did earlier in the year. But soccer-wise, they opened it up. And Chicago Fire came in. And Chicago Fire have now been part of 4 stadium openings, I think, in the last 3 years, and they haven't won a game at it. I mean, I feel bad for these guys. Like, hey, there's going to be the biggest crowd you've ever seen. They're going to be really excited because this is either their new stadium or it's a new franchise, and you're going to go play.
And Chicago, you're going to go do it.
You're going to go do it, and then you still haven't won a game. Sorry.
Yeah, they're a long ways off, I think, right now from the Chris Armas Chicago Fire days, where they were one of the best teams in the country, no question. But, yeah, 2 set-piece goals for San Jose. Ty Harden, Husky, getting the game winner. Ship pulled on back for Chicago. But just not enough for Chicago in the end. San Jose, now 2 wins. Didn't really see that coming, I have to say. Didn't see that coming for San Jose right now, especially, you know, considering their win here in Seattle 2 weeks ago. But,
yeah,
nonetheless, exciting for them. David Bingham, another good game, goalkeeping for the Quakes, so. That's good to see San Jose getting
well,
some points.
And don't think there's not a connection with Dominic Kinnear being there and them being successful. I mean, Dominic Kinnear has been a very successful coach in the MLS. He knows the league very well.
Yeah, you're right.
You might look at their roster and say, well, you know, I'm not so sure. But this guy, I mean, this guy's done it for a long time. Remember, he was doing it in San Jose.
Yeah.
Then he went to Houston and did it for a long time there. And now he's back. I mean, this is – Dominic Kinnear, I got the chance to play with him for a short time. Great guy, just a very good soccer IQ, high soccer IQ. Understood the game as a player very well, and he understands people. You know, he understands the guys He always understood his teammates very well, you know, was a good guy in the locker room as a player. And I think you see that as a coach. Guys like to play for him. His teams always work and they battle for each other. You know, I think Dominic Kinnear, you know, obviously doing a great job so far there in San Jose.
That's a great point, Sobs. Yeah, especially him going to Houston. I'm sure he wanted to eventually come back to San Jose where he'd spent a lot of time. And he wants to make it work there, no question. So great point there, Dominic Kinnear.
Yeah.
Excellent coach, like you said.
Yeah. Let's talk about this because I've seen this. We've seen this trend here over the first few weeks of the season. We had 3-0-0 results and a 1-1 tie. A lot of low scoring. I mean, we haven't seen this. You know, we had Kansas City, Portland 0-0. We had New England, Montreal 0-0. We had New York City FC and Colorado 0-0. Galaxy, Dynamo 1-1. What are your thoughts on these 0-0 draws? But poor attacking or good defending?
Well, I think a little bit of both. And both these games actually, well, two of them anyways, the New England and the Montreal. Montreal hasn't scored a goal yet in the MLS, even though they're doing fairly well in the CONCACAF Champions League. New England still struggling as well to score goals. So you have two, and they're still missing Jermaine Jones. But this game was kind of set up to maybe be a 0-0 draw. They also had two yellow cards in this game, giving a little red card for Orduro. He wasn't the one that got the red card. It was Kamara. Kamara for Montreal. Two yellow cards. He's off. Montreal dropping back, just trying to save things. There was definitely some misses here from New England. Lee Nguyen getting one, had a big, huge chance. Orduro had a huge miss for the impact. And other than that, there weren't a whole lot of opportunities. And especially after Montreal went down to 10 men, they just kind of had to drop back and defend as much as they could. Similar situation between Colorado and New York City. Mark Birch for Colorado had a bunch of chances that kind of just threw away. Josh Saunders had another great game for New York City. And then Shea Facey got a red card as well after two yellows for New York City FC. It's the same kind of deal. They had to drop back in, and it kind of just ruins the game, you know. But the referee was right in both situations. Both referees got the calls right. But the Montreal cards by Kamara, where his last one was just pulling the guy down, a completely cynical foul, and was instantly taken off the field. So he deserved it completely. But, you know, those are situations where the teams want to get a point. They drop in. People are struggling to finish. Colorado is still struggling to score goals. So that's no surprise, I think, between these 0-0 ties. And sometimes leagues just go through these week where, for whatever reason, no goals are scored. But especially looking at that New England-Montreal game, no one's even scored a goal in league yet. And Colorado still hasn't even scored a goal. So these teams are still relying completely on their defenses and haven't quite got the offensive part figured out yet. As far as the Portland game goes, it was just one of those where, again, the strikers who got two goals last week doesn't get any this time, misses his early chances, and defensively Portland obviously showed they're a lot more solid than they were last year, so it goes 0-0 that time. But, you know, I think this next weekend we'll see a lot more goals.
Well, and let's talk. Hey, you know, I think it's early on in the year. You know, teams are still getting their rhythm, trying to find the right combinations, you know, and lineups, whatnot. So, you know, I don't think it's anything concerning. It's something I've noticed over the last few weeks, just, you know, when you're watching the games and thinking, there's another 0-0. There's another 0-0, you know. So just not, you know, just something I noticed this weekend. Couple, you know, everybody's playing. It's a big weekend in terms of games. Everybody's playing, especially on Saturday. Just a couple games to note. San Jose at New England. That should be a good game. Orlando up to Montreal. You mentioned 10 players missing total from that game due to national team call-ups.
Yeah, that's tough for both sides.
That is a tough one. DC United at LA Galaxy. That's going to be another good one.
DC, got it. They need to win. Bouncing back from that New York.
Yeah, they have to. A Cascadia Cup match. Portland at Vancouver. Big game for Portland, I feel like. I feel like they need 3 points out of that game, but I think that's going to be very difficult for them.
Yeah, it's going to be a good matchup between Vancouver's Rivero, who's got 3 goals now, and Portland defense. So that'll be fun to see.
Yeah. Well, and then, of course, Seattle Sounders, they're traveling to FC Dallas. That's going to, you know, rematch of last year's first-round playoff match. And, you know, FC Dallas sitting at the top of the table. Sounders, no Clint Dempsey, hamstring pulled out for about 3 weeks. Should be interesting to see how they adjust. You know, does Brad Evans maybe go out wide in the midfield and Nagel goes up top? And you know, we end up we end up with a different center back, or, you know, do we just slide somebody in on the right side? I'm not sure how that's going to go. What do you think about that, Heinz?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I think Kovar, who showed really well earlier this week against Tijuana, is a possibility of seeing him. Christian Roldan, another young guy, former UW player. Both the guys are young players out of the Seattle area. We could possibly be seeing them. I think Siggy's looking at, you know, obviously he's got to switch something up in the attack. And he knows that defensively is a good point stops, because Blas Perez has been on fire, and Dallas are 3-0. They've got to stop him first before they do anything else on the offensive side. So I don't know if we'll see Brad Evans at center back. I think that's going to change.
Blas Perez gone on international duty, though?
No, right, he's now not gone. He's around El Salvador and not doing anything right now.
Right.
So
okay,
he should be there.
Yeah.
As far as I know.
Well, that should be interesting. I mean, because obviously you've got Zach Scott ready and able to play center back. He played well last year. And
right,
you know, I know he – I mean, I know that they prefer to use him as a reserve because he can kind of slot in any of the four spots in the back. But, you know, at this point, I don't know. I just don't know. I just don't know what they're going to do there with Dempsey out. And you know, I don't know who else we'd see up front. You know, I don't know if we see, you know, I honestly, I don't know who else we would see up front. So it should be interesting to see what Siggy Schmidt does. Moving on to Sunday. Oh, it's the big game of the week, Hanzo. It is the big game of the week. Philadelphia at Chicago.
Oh, yeah. The meeting of the two.
Will Philadelphia score a goal? Will Chicago get their first win?
I got to say, yeah, exactly. I'm going to say Chicago, they at least have goals. That's all I got. I think Chicago's, they're going to do it. Sean Maloney, he's going to get his first goal. That's my prediction. I'm going to say Chicago gets the win over Philadelphia.
Yeah,
I think they deserve it more. They're the better team. They've had a couple of unlucky defensive mistakes that cost them goals in the first two games of the season. So I think they're going to do. I think Philadelphia look like they're in real trouble.
Yeah, it's a tough one. I'm calling Chicago on that one. Other big game on Sunday, Toronto at Real Salt Lake. Of course, Toronto, no Michael Bradley.
Right.
No Jozy Altidore. Real Salt Lake, no Nick Raimondo, but they do have Kyle Becker. Make this roster.
Right. I gotta make one correction real quick. I said Blas Perez was from El Salvador. He's actually from Panama. So that's,
yeah.
But he will be there for the game.
But he's not in El Salvador.
No, he's not.
So you were right.
He's not in
that.
El Salvador, so I am right about that.
But you were right. He's not in El Salvador.
Yeah, that actually makes you feel better. Yeah.
Okay. Good. Nice.
But
nice.
He's got three goals already. So this season. So.
Yeah.
Extremely.
One other note here on Minnesota United, MLS's 23rd team to begin play in 2018. Congratulations to them. They outbid Las Vegas. And actually there was two bids coming out of Minnesota, and there was Minnesota United, who the current NASL team in the U.S. second division. They outbid the Minnesota Vikings, the NFL owner, was trying to put in that franchise there. So that's very good. Great, great to hear that. They've got plans for a new soccer specific stadium. And, you know, I think one thing to note about Minnesota United, why I think they're going to be successful, because they've done it very similarly to how Seattle, Portland, Vancouver, and now Orlando have done, where these are not just brand new franchises popping up. These are teams that have been operating in the lower divisions for quite some time. They're established in their community. Now they're just growing. They're going to get bigger. And we saw how that happened here in Seattle. We saw how it happened and worked in Portland and Vancouver. And now we're seeing it, of course, in Orlando. And I think these guys have the right blueprint to be very successful there in Minnesota.
Yeah, no question. And, you know, the stadium thing is obviously a really big deal. They have the fan base, the one that MLS want to kind of grow out from there, kind of a similar kind of culture to here in the Northwest over there in Minnesota. So it's a great deal. I do feel a bit badly for the Sacramento Republic, who also have a very nice organization down there. I think the question comes to their stadium situations they have and the fact that their proximity to San Jose.
But
it is exciting.
In talking to Taylor Graham this week, former Seattle Sounder player, Sacramento legend, he was talking about that, and he thinks that there's still a chance for Sacramento Republic to get in, because right now you've got Atlanta coming in 2017. That's your 24 team. You've got LAFC coming in either 2017 or 2018. There's your 25th. They need another team. There's going to be one more bid out there. Sacramento is still potentially in the mix to get something here in the next few years. Of course, we saw Sacramento Republic play in the USL against S2. You actually announced that game, didn't you, Heinzo?
Yes, I did.
Yeah. Went well. First broadcast sounded great. Aaron Hines and S2, you can check him out on YouTube.
Oh, thank you.
But sounded great in that game. You know, we got to see them. They traveled, you know, all their supporters. I was there with my young team, and we had to walk through their supporters. It was a gong show in there, so it was good to see. You know, I think Sacramento still does have a chance to get in there. We'd love to see that, another West Coast team. So
absolutely,
it'd be good. Listen, we've given ourselves 15 minutes, and it's an important 15 minutes, Heinzen, because we've got to talk Man United, Liverpool, and we got to talk Clasico. This is Todd Stauber and Aaron Heinzen on From the Touchline in Seattle. We're on Blog Talk Radio. We're also on the backsportspage.com. Check out our archived shows on there. You can also check us out on Twitter. We're on Twitter at FTTL in Seattle. And you can come on, tell us what you think. Let's talk first, as the day went, let's talk Man United, Liverpool, and what a couple of goals from Juan Mata.
Oh, the first half for Manchester United, they were absolutely fantastic. And it was a great ball to open up Mata, great little finish.
Yeah.
And United looked really good in the first half. They kind of let
Ander Herrera, and we talked about Ander Herrera being very important and coming on right now. And, you know, I thought he played very well in the first half. I thought he really gave United a lot. But that ball that he slipped in to Mata was just class.
Yeah.
United Spanish connection coming through.
Yeah, exactly. I think there's no question that Herrera needs to be in the starting 11. Pretty much every single time Man United are on the field. Juan Mata really starting to show that he deserves to be out there as well, especially his second goal was completely world-class. The only ball I think that Di Maria was able to connect with anyone all day. He subbed on, and we're pretty excited because it was 11-on-10 at that point, which we'll get to in a second. But it's a great ball from Di Maria, but he just kept giving balls away time and time again. He didn't look comfortable out there at all, especially on the left-hand side. So more work to come on him. But nonetheless, Mata's goal was absolutely breathtaking. It was unbelievable.
I'm not left-footed, so as that ball's coming in, traveling, and the way I'm moving, I don't think to turn my body like that and jump and side volley that. Just to adjust his body and get into that position to hit that and then to connect on it the way he did. I mean, it's just a whole nother level from United. But obviously Liverpool at that point was dealing with a situation they didn't really need to be or have to be dealing with. Steven Gerrard comes on the field at halftime. He almost broke Juan Mata's back in the first tackle that he laid down,
right.
which was, I mean, holy cow. He went through him like he was trying to end his life. No call on that because, I mean, I guess it was clean-ish,
sure strong, yeah. I don't know. If it's somebody else, I think maybe they get a yellow card. If it's Steven Gerrard, I think he's given the benefit of the doubt.
So he flips him up in the air. The ball scoots out, comes right back to him. You know, Ander Herrera is obviously going to throw a tackle in after what he just saw happen to Mata. He's just happy that he's alive. And Stevie G just stomps down on him right in front of the referee. I mean, a moment of madness from him, not the first we've seen in his career. And, you know, I mean, I feel bad for him, to be dead honest, because I'm sure he was upset he didn't start. I'm sure he's coming on. He'd been pretty good. If you watch the first 36 seconds of that, or the first 25 seconds before he goes mad, he gets the ball, he changes it, he's on the ball. You know, he's making his presence known right away, and then he made his presence well known.
I can't say it better. Yeah, you're exactly right. He starts spraying balls around, play that one out wide, and gets it back. And, yeah, just a moment of madness, wanted to inject some energy into it, and then he lost his mind for a minute. I think he was probably disappointed to see his team getting outplayed the way they were in the first half, knowing that the points that they need. I mean, you know, you think about Steven Gerrard and the quality of the player he is, has been for years, and he's won the FA Cup, he's won the Champions League, but that guy in the back of his mind, he knows he's never going to win a Premier League title, especially for a team who's won 18 Premier League titles. And he just happened to be, you know, have his career in the middle of one of the best dynasties of all time in English Premier League soccer with Manchester United, and then Chelsea shows up, and then Manchester City shows up, and all this money is being put into the Premier League, and he's watched Liverpool, who are still one of the most expensive teams they have in England, but they're unable to compete, and you know, they've had some bad players around him at times, had some great players, but they can't keep people like Suarez or Xabi Alonso. So he's watched these other midfields grow at Man City, at Chelsea, at United, at even at Arsenal, and it just hasn't been enough for Liverpool. And I think last year, he's just got to be, I mean, I'm speculating, obviously, but 1 point off from last year, and knowing this is his last game against Manchester United, who knows? Maybe he just didn't get enough to eat at breakfast, but, you know, it's just one of those things where I think, you know, he wanted to get in, wanted it so bad, and had a little moment of madness, and the referee happened to be right there, and, you know, he should have been red carded and was, but I do feel bad. I'm right there with you. He's a great player, and it is kind of surprising when you talk about Steven Gerrard. Guy never won a Premier League title.
Yeah, well, and let's talk about this. I mean, you know, Liverpool's got roughly 8 games remaining, I think.
Yep, 7, I think. 7 or 8, yeah. 8,
seven. Right. Has it come out how long, how many games he's suspended for?
He is, no, I don't know. I know Skrtel's out for 3.
Yeah,
Skrtel had a stamping incident at the very end of Davide.
Another great moment in that match.
Yeah. Which, you know, they kind of let their foot off the gas, you know.
My question is, does Brendan Rodgers put Steven Gerrard on the field again? Can he trust him?
Oh, he absolutely will. You know, you gotta say goodbye to the guy. Steven Gerrard's having his kind of celebration game this weekend. He and Jamie Carragher put some teams together. They got some world-class players coming that aren't on international duty. Drogba, Xabi Alonso is going to be there. Suarez is going to be there. You know, old classics, John Arne Riise. So it's going to be a fun game for Liverpool, but there's no question. I mean, Steven Gerrard is Liverpool modern-day football team. So, yeah, he'll be on the field again. He'll have to. He'll need him. He's still a quality player, but, yeah, it's going to be tough. He's missing him, and maybe Rodgers isn't that disappointed that he's missing Rodgers or missing Gerrard for the next 3 games. I don't know.
Obviously, his form has dropped off a little bit. He hasn't really been in the 11 consistently. I would say since early in the year, and now, Liverpool's got some important games. I mean, it's not like they're not in the hunt here. You know, they've got some extremely important games coming up. So if he's already, you know, if he's already not solidly in the 11, and I mean, I'm not going to say the Manchester United game was his fault because it wasn't, but he certainly didn't help the situation.
Right.
I understand the guy's been Liverpool through and through, and he's meant everything to the club, and they've got to send him off properly before he goes to LA and comes to MLS. But I mean, if I'm that manager and I'm battling for the top four like I am, I'm thinking twice about putting him in, because who's to say he's not going to do that again?
Right. That's fair. And you're right. The Liverpool are now looking at life without Steven Gerrard already. No question. So he'll definitely get in play times. He'll start and play games, but it may be that happens towards the end of the season when they're in the Champions League final. I don't know. I don't know if they'll have any more games though the rest of the season where they're like, we're in the place we're in, and, you know, Steven, go ahead and say, wave your goodbyes for the last 2 games and kind of just play the game. Anytime Steven Gerrard gets out there, though, he's going to be playing his heart out. So, I mean, he's still a quality player. He's still somebody that can make a difference. You're right. They've already. I think Brendan Rodgers has already moved on. Obviously, they know he's going to LA. So it may be that we see Steven Gerrard a lot less than we might have if he had not got the red card.
All right. Well, let's. I mean, I want the best for him, obviously, and I'm looking forward to him coming here. I mean, I can't
Absolutely.
Wait. Can't wait to see him here at Century League Field in Seattle, playing him and Robbie Keane. It's going to be such a show. I can't wait for it. But let's move on to the Clásico. What a game. Gosh, I almost had a nightmare with that. I went down to Lower Queen Anne to watch it, to get it on a TV at a bar. And I was in Lower Queen Anne where the whole entire NCAA basketball tournament was being played. And I was surrounded by all basketball fans who had zero interest, in watching anything other than basketball. So I had to find a very discreet little Thai restaurant that they were nice enough to, put the game on for me. But,
nice work.
Yeah. A little Racha Thai. It's a nice spot. Yeah, great little pad thai. But what a game. I mean, what a game. And, you know, obviously Barcelona, you know, they come out. Great little ball by Messi in a great header for that first goal. But I thought Real Madrid's goal to equalize, Modric, the one-time heel from Benzema, and the sliding toe poke from Ronaldo. What a goal that was.
Yeah, anytime you get the El Clasico, that's why everybody wants to watch. It's such an exciting game. It's just the best players in the world are on the field, at least with Messi and Ronaldo and definitely a handful of others. Benzema's heel, like you said, was completely fantastic.
Modric. Delicious, as you would
Benzema,
say.
Delicious. And great goal for Ronaldo. He had to really stretch for that. It was an excellent goal. But again, Barcelona coming out on top. The ball from Dani Alves was superb.
Goal. I mean, and what was better, the ball from Dani Alves or the first touch from Suarez? Suarez is running at full pace.
Yeah.
For him to take that touch at full pace and then to chop that ball back, I mean, holy cow. When I planted that left foot, if I'm him, my entire knee explodes. Just, I mean, what an unbelievable touch. And then to cut that back against the grain. What a great goal that was. What an absolutely great goal that was.
Yeah, it was fantastic. A great, perfect game winner for a game like that. And obviously, you know, huge win for Barcelona as far as La Liga standings go. So they really are in line. I think they're going to get the domestic. I think they'll win the league title. Easy to say now, I think. And I think they'll also win the Copa del Rey. But I don't see them winning the Champions League. That's just my thoughts. So, I mean, they're Messi is... Clearly, his display against Manchester City, we've already talked about, everyone's talked about, it's been unbelievable. He's definitely the best player in the world. I think he's one of the best players. I think he is the best player of all time. But I don't see them beating Bayern Munich.
Yeah, well, and I mean, just in looking at the game was so well played. And I mean, I compare it to the PSG-Chelsea game with all the play acting and dives and all the
right.
You know, just all the crap that was going on in this game. There was none of it. I mean, there was
nice
none of it.
To see it cleaned up.
Which is surprising because you had Pepe and Sergio Ramos on the field, but but there was, you know, I thought it was just a well-played game. It was just a game that I just enjoyed watching both teams play. I wanted Barcelona to win, but I just wanted a good game. I didn't care really either way. And I certainly wasn't disappointed when I walked away. It's just a great match both ways. And I thought Real Madrid played very well. But how about Real Madrid flying back to Madrid? Going to get their cars from their training complex there in Madrid, and the fans waiting outside literally at like 3 a.m. beating on the car of Gareth Bale and the other players as they drive out. I mean, you got to be kidding me.
Yeah, that's, you know, you play Real Madrid. I mean, that's kind of what they expect. Well, maybe not what they expect. That's definitely, I mean, there's obviously over the line stuff, but you're in a pressure cooker all the time at that club, and they demand the results, and they're, you know, coming off the Schalke. Sure, they're through the next round of the Champions League, but there was a horrible performance. They know they've lost the league now, unless Barcelona slip up, and it's not looking like that. They're not in the Copa del Rey. They're looking to not win a single trophy this year. So I think the fans have a right to be upset. They have the most expensive player in the world. They have the current World Player of the Year. They've got all kinds of top-class internationals, but they're not winning games. They're not getting the big results that they need. So
yeah,
it's at Real Madrid. At Madrid.
I understand all that. I'm going to play devil's advocate. I agree, and I understand all that. You don't touch another man's vehicle, man.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, I'm guessing we're not just talking about, like, you know, like the Mercury you drive or the 2003 Audi without a front bumper that I drive. We're talking about some pretty nice cars, you know, that Gareth Bale and Cristiano Ronaldo are driving.
Sure.
I mean, man. I just think it's so far out of line. I read this morning those fans have been identified and they're going to be banned.
Which is appropriate. But I'll play their side. You know,
these guys
are making so much money, and you know, Spain, the way the economy's been the last few years, and fans, you know, they get out of hand. They see these guys not getting the results, getting the money they're paid. You know, all the kind of things that they get going along with being Madrid players. I mean, you know. They don't care if they get their cars dented up a little bit, you know, they're upset and they see people skating along, just making money, you know, wearing the white shirt for a few years, then they move on. They don't have as much allegiance to these people who are there day in and day out. So you're right.
Well,
going too far, but you know, I can see where they're coming from.
Well, it looks like Getafe and Atletico Madrid just picked up a few fans there in Madrid because they aren't going to be going anymore. But we are, unfortunately, we're all out of time, Heinz. Oh, great show, though. This is Todd Stauber and Aaron Heinzen on From the Touchline in Seattle. We're on Blog Talk Radio every Friday morning, 9 a.m. Pacific time. I believe that's noon in over on the East Coast. And I also believe that's 6 a.m. for our Hawaiians listening in, Zach Kingsley. Also, we are now on Twitter. Hit us up on Twitter during the week and look for any updates at FTTL in Seattle. That is our Twitter handle, and you can check out our archived episodes on backsportspage.com.
Stars, I do have one thing to say really quick. My one last correction, Blaskowitz is not playing for Dallas this weekend. Either it's Watson, Baker, Becker, Hernandez, Harris, or Jesse Gonzalez. They are gone for internationals.
And we are signing off.